Welcome to the Voice of America in Mandarin.
这里是美国之音的中文广播，现在就开始今天下午六个小时的中文节目。
听众朋友好，欢迎收听今天的美国之音中文节目。今天是2016年7月28号星期四，现在是北京时间下午5点，下面为您播报新闻。美国总统奥巴马星期三阐述了为什么他认为希拉里·克林顿应该在他明年一月卸任的时候接替他成为美国总统。他说，无论是男性还是女性，没有一个人比希拉里更胜任这个职务。在宾州费城举行的民主党全国代表大会上，奥巴马强调了希拉里在他政府中所取得的各项成就。他把希拉里形容成为一个这样的候选人，他相信当所有背景的人团结在一起的时候，这个国家会变得更加美好。奥巴马还谈到了希拉里的从政经验，例如在他第一届总统任期之内担任过美国国务卿等，并且以此与毫无公职经验的共和党候选人川普进行对比。当奥巴马提到川普的名字时，人群中爆发出一片唏嘘声。奥巴马说，不要虚，要投票。奥巴马说，上星期的共和党全国代表大会非但没有解决提出的严肃的解决问题的办法，反而煽动不满、指责、愤怒和仇恨。奥巴马总统批评了川普的竞选班子提出的在美墨西边界建造围墙以及禁止穆斯林进入美国等建议。奥巴马还对川普向北约盟国发出的强硬信息进行了抨击。川普表示，在美国提供援助之前，他会坚持让这些国家首先履行自己的财务责任。美国共和党总统候选人川普星期三鼓励俄罗斯潜入他的民主党对手希拉里·克林顿的电邮服务器，寻找克林顿担任国务卿时失踪的那33000条电子邮件。川普对媒体说，要是看到那些电邮会很好，很有意思。他说，我要告诉你，俄罗斯，如果你在听的话，我希望你们能够找到这33000条失踪的电邮，我想你们可能会从我们的媒体那里得到丰厚的回报。川普还说，莫斯科可能已经掌握了这些电邮，克林顿认为这些是他的私人电邮，并从2009年到2013年他在奥巴马总统第一届任期内担任国务卿期间使用的这个电邮服务器上给删除了。川普说，俄罗斯或许已经拿到了这些电邮。他说，我希望这些电邮能够公布于众。克林顿的竞选班子针对川普的声明指出，这是一位主要的总统候选人首次积极的怂恿外国政权对一名政治对手进行间谍活动。熟悉此事的一位美国情报官员告诉美国之音，川普的讲话对他作为共和党总统候选人即将要听取的情报汇报没有影响。星期三，土耳其当局宣布解除2400多名军人的职务，并且查封了数十家媒体。针对埃尔多安总统的政变失败以后的镇压行动看来正在扩大，至少有一名新闻工作者遭到拘禁。土耳其最大的报纸《时代报》编辑部原来的工作人员有近50人受到了逮捕证。美国国务院表示，对新闻媒体采取的这种行动代表着一种令人不安的势头。未遂政变之后抓捕记者是土耳其政治中出现的令人不安势头的一部分。维基揭秘星期三公布了，据他所称，从民主党全国委员会的服务器上获取的29个录音。这些录音邮件显然是从7位民主党全国委员会成员的电邮账号当中拷贝下来的，其中有些同僚对桑德斯在民主党中的影响感到不满。据报道，一位留言者不希望这位来自佛蒙特州的参议员在全国代表大会上发言。各位听众，以上是美国之音的一组新闻简讯，感谢收听。
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Moore. Welcome to Functioning in Business.
各位听众好，我是杨晨，欢迎收听商务通英语。
Functioning in Business is an intermediate level business English course with a focus on American business practices and culture.
商务通英语是中等程度的商务英语课程，课程题材以美国的商业实践和文化为主，通过电台播音室里的采访和绘画讲授美国英语。今天我们复习本星期的课程，在第一课中，我们重点讲解了用什么语言表达自己的意见。首先请听电话访谈。
On today's program, I'll be talking with Shirley Graham. She is calling from her office at Advanced Technologies in San Jose, California. How are you, Ms. Graham?
Fine, thanks.
Today, we are going to listen to your meeting with Mr. Epstein on Tuesday, June 11th last year. Mr. Epstein had met with Mr. Blake earlier that day, and they had discussed your plans to build a new factory.
Yes, that's right. And I wanted to be sure that Mr. Blake was aware of my concerns about the October deadline and after-sales service.
Let's listen to the conversation.
Okay.
Now, have you already discussed any of the project with him?
Yes, I had an excellent meeting with him this afternoon.
And did you tell him about my main concerns?
Do you mean the October deadline?
Yes, and the fact that they have no after-sales service in the States.
Yes, I did. And again, I was very impressed with his flexibility. I think that we can work things out with him.
Okay, as long as it's clear to both of you that it has to be worked out, and before October, because that's our deadline.
Well, again, I understand your reservations, Shirley, but again, the technology of their product is really excellent. I think we really have to go ahead with this.
Yes, all right. Well, let's discuss it further tomorrow. All right?
Okay, all right. Thank you. We'll see you tomorrow.
We'll see you around 12 o'clock.
Okay.
听说练习，请大家跟着我们说。
Have you discussed the project with him? Did you tell him about my main concerns? Do you mean the October deadline? I was very impressed with his flexibility. I think that we can work things out with him.
下面 Elizabeth 继续采访 Graham 女士。
Ms. Graham, let's talk about your conversation with Mr. Epstein. Your main concerns were with the October deadline and after-sales service.
Yes, that's right. I wanted to be sure that the robots could be delivered and installed on time.
By October.
Yes, the factory had to begin operation in October. I also was concerned about after-sales service.International Robotics is a Chinese company. I wasn't sure that they would be able to provide adequate maintenance and repair service.
Mr. Epstein seemed pleased with Mr. Blake's responses to these questions.
Yes, Mr. Epstein was convinced that we should buy Mr. Blake's robots. I wasn't so sure.
I see. Well, thank you very much for being on our show.
It's been my pleasure.
Let's take a short break.
文化点滴。
Welcome once again to Culture Tips. We're here with our business language expert, Gary Engleton. Gary, we have an email question about the structure of American companies. The question is, how are American companies organized?
Well, most traditional American companies have a clear organizational structure. It's clear who does what.People can change jobs, but the company structure does not change. For example, a salesperson can become a sales manager.
Or the manager of a department can become a vice president.
Yes, that's right. A worker can be promoted to a better job within the organization.
the organization doesn't change.
I see.
Newer companies sometimes have a more flexible structure, especially in the high-tech world. These companies may be organized into project teams. These teams may be temporary.
Temporary?
Yes, they may work together only for a short time. Then the workers may be moved to other teams for different projects.
And what if there is no new project?
In many companies, these workers may be laid off. The president or vice presidents may not change, but the managers and workers will change jobs much more than in the past.
Why does a company adopt a flexible structure?
The world of business is changing very quickly. A flexible structure helps a company move quickly.
That makes sense. Let's listen to today's business dialogue.
I really think that we need to spend more money on research. We need more computer technology to keep up with the competition.
That's a good point. But in my opinion, we have to focus on keeping costs down. It seems to me that computer technology greatly increases the price of a car.
But I think that we need to move into the high-end market. And that means selling more cars to rich people in the U.S. and overseas.
Perhaps we should talk to our director of marketing.
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Gary 提示。
Now it's time for Gary's Tips with Gary Engleton.
Hello, Elizabeth. Today I'll be talking about how to offer an opinion. When you give an opinion, it is a good idea to use an expression like, I think, or in my opinion. In this way, you show that you know you are offering an opinion, not stating a fact. In the business dialogue we heard earlier, the company president and vice president have different ideas about the importance of new technology. The president thinks that more money should be spent on research, but the vice president thinks it is more important to keep costs down. They use the expressions, I really think, and in my opinion, when they give their opinions.
I really think that we need to spend more money on research. We need more computer technology to keep up with the competition.
That's a good point. But in my opinion, we have to focus on keeping costs down.
Both executives try to soften the difference of opinion and keep the conversation going. The vice president also uses the expression, it seems to me, to offer his opinion.
It seems to me that computer technology greatly increases the price of a car.
Using the expression, it seems to me, is a good way to offer an opinion. American culture values the free expression of ideas. When personal opinions are presented as opinions and not as facts, people are more comfortable offering different opinions. This free discussion can also lead to new ideas, which are good for business. Thanks for joining us today for Gary's Tips. We'll see you again next time.
Thanks, Gary.
本星期第二课我们重点讲解怎样客气地表达不同意见。首先请听电话访谈。
On today's program, I'll be talking with Mr. Mike Epstein. We'll be speaking with Mr. Epstein by phone from his office in San Jose, California. Welcome, Mr. Epstein. On our last program, we spoke with Ms. Graham about your meeting on June 11th.
Yes, we met together after my meeting with Mr. Blake. I was very impressed with Mr. Blake's company, but Ms. Graham had some doubts.
She told us that she was concerned about after-sales service and about the October deadline.
Yes, she was quite concerned about those issues, and I was confident that we would be able to work things out.
Let's listen to the conversation.
Now, have you already discussed any of the project with him?
Yes, I had an excellent meeting with him this afternoon.
And did you tell him about my main concerns?
Do you mean the October deadline?
Yes, and the fact that they have no after-sales service in the States.
Yes, I did. And again, I was very impressed with his flexibility. I think that we can work things out with him.
Okay. As long as it's clear to both of you that it has to be worked out, and before October, because that's our deadline.
Well, again, I understand your reservations, Shirley, but again, the technology of their product is really excellent. I think we really have to go ahead with this.
Yes. All right. Well, let's discuss it further tomorrow. All right?
Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll see you tomorrow.
We'll see you around 12 o'clock.
Okay.
So Ms. Graham still had doubts about Mr. Blake's ability to meet the deadline.
Yes, she did. I knew she was worried that Mr. Blake's company would not be able to install the robots on time, by the October deadline.
But you disagreed.
Yes, I was very impressed by the quality of the industrial robots. I knew that Mr. Blake's company had the best technology, and I saw that Mr. Blake was very flexible. I was sure he could deliver on time.
What about after-sales service?
Again, I felt that we could work out a solution with Mr. Blake.
Thank you very much for being on our show. Your comments have been very interesting.
It's been my pleasure.
Let's take a short break. Hello, and welcome again to Culture Tips. Gary Angleton, our business language expert, is here with us again.
Welcome, everybody.
We have an email question about communicating with bosses. The question is, sometimes I hear American workers arguing with their bosses. Is this normal in American companies?
Well, I would say that good bosses encourage their subordinates to disagree with them.
Why is that?
Well, think about it. Let's say that the boss is going to make a new policy. A subordinate feels strongly that the new policy will cause big problems. If the subordinate is right, the boss will look very bad.
I think that I understand. The subordinate can help the boss by keeping him or her from doing something stupid.
Yes, that's it exactly. That's why good bosses want their subordinates to tell them when they are wrong. Of course, the bosses want to hear strong facts and reasons to support the disagreement.
So they only want intelligent disagreement.
Yes, good bosses want to listen to different opinions and then make a decision. But there are limits.
What kind of limits?
Well, after the final decision is made, everyone has to support it, even the people who disagreed with it. If they don't support it, there will be a really bad atmosphere in the office.
So it's okay to disagree before the decision is made, but afterwards you have to be quiet.
Yes.
Well, once again we've learned a lot. Thanks, Gary. Let's listen to today's business dialogue.
I'm really worried about the team. They're working so much that they're too tired to think clearly. I think we've got to give them a couple of days off.
I can understand your concern, but the project is almost finished. If we can keep everyone working for 3 or 4 more days, we'll be able to complete it on time. Then they can take a break for a day or two.
I hope you're right, but I don't know if they can keep going for 3 or 4 more days.
Henry, I understand what you're saying, but I think that you're a bit too worried. They're stronger than you think, and they know the importance of this deadline. Let's help them get through it, okay?
Okay. I'll do what I can.
Gary 提示。
Now it's time for Gary's Tips with Gary Angleton.
Hello, Elizabeth. Today I'll be talking about how to disagree politely.
In business, it is sometimes necessary to disagree, even with your boss.
When you disagree, it's important to recognize the other person's feeling. In American business or social situations, it is very impolite to say directly, "You're wrong." Instead, you should use expressions for polite disagreement, as we hear in today's business dialogue. It is always a good idea to show that you understand the other person's position. For example, Amy says to Henry that she can understand his concern.
I'm really worried about the team. They're working so much that they're too tired to think clearly. I think we've got to give them a couple of days off.
I can understand your concern, but the project is almost finished.
In a similar way, Mr. Epstein shows that he understands Ms. Graham's position.
Well, again, I understand your reservations, Shirley, but again, the technology of their product is really excellent.
Even if you don't agree with people, you should let them know that you understand their idea. Here is an example from the business dialogue.
Henry, I understand what you're saying, but I think that you're a bit too worried.
If you want to resolve a disagreement and find the best solution, you want to keep communication open. The best way to do this is to treat the other person with respect. Using the expressions we've discussed today is one way to show this respect for the other person's ideas. Thanks for joining us today for Gary's Tips. We'll see you again next time.
Thanks, Gary.
本星期第三课我们重点讲解了怎样使用拖延、推迟时间的语言。首先是电话访谈。
On today's program, I'll be talking with Mr. Mike Epstein. Mr. Epstein will be with us by phone from his office at Advanced Technologies. Welcome, Mr. Epstein. On our last show, we listened to your conversation with Ms. Graham. There was one thing I wasn't sure about.
Yes, what was it?
You wanted to buy robots from Mr. Blake's company.
Yes.
And you said, I think we really have to go ahead with this.
Uh-huh.
Well, Ms. Graham replied, yes, all right. But she didn't really agree with you, did she?
No, she didn't.
Let's listen to the conversation.
Well, again, I understand your reservations, Shirley. But again, the technology of their product is really excellent. I think we really have to go ahead with this.
Yes. All right. Well, let's discuss it further tomorrow. All right?
Okay. All right.
Why does she say, yes, all right, if she doesn't agree with you?
She is stalling.
Excuse me?
She's stalling. She is delaying her decision until later. That's why she says, let's discuss it further tomorrow.
I see.
She understood my position, but she didn't want to talk about it anymore.
Oh, now I understand. Thank you. So, what did you do after your meeting with Ms. Graham?
I called Mr. Blake at his hotel to confirm the meeting.
Did you speak to him?
No, I didn't. I left a message on his voicemail.
Let's listen to that telephone call.
Embassy Suites Hotel?
Yes, could you please connect me with Mr. Charles Blake?
Do you have his room number?
No, I don't.
One moment, please. I'm sorry, but your party is not answering. Would you like to leave a message?
Yes, please.
One moment, and I'll connect you to his voicemail.
The person you are calling is not available at this time. Please leave a message at the sound of the tone.
This is Mike Epstein. I wanted to confirm your meeting with Ms. Graham for tomorrow, Wednesday, June 12th. We will meet you at your hotel a few minutes after 12, and we'll have lunch together. I look forward to seeing you then. Goodbye.
Welcome once again to Culture Tips with Gary Engleton.
Welcome, everybody.
Well, Gary, today we have an email question about another important aspect of American business culture.
Great. What's the question?
The question is, how is information communicated in an American business?
Well, let's start with meetings. If there is information that really needs to be discussed, Americans usually call a meeting.
Uh-huh.
But in many American companies, people don't like meetings.
Why is that?
Well, they take up a lot of time. Everyone has to stop working and sit together.
I understand. What else can you do?
Well, you can write a memo and give everyone a copy.
That's convenient.
Yes, it's a good method when you want to give simple information to many people. But if you want to communicate with only one or two people, it is easier just to walk over and talk to them.
Personal communication can be very nice.
Yes, it's not as formal. It's friendly. Many Americans prefer that method. But email is really popular now.
Why?
Well, it's fast, and you can do it from your desk.
That is convenient, but not as personal. Well, thanks again, Gary.
I'm glad that I could help.
Let's listen to today's business dialogue.
Frank, can I talk to you?
Is it about Joe again?
Yes, it is. He's way behind on the project.
Joan, I'm really busy right now. Let's discuss it tomorrow.
Frank, it can't wait. He's hurting the whole team.
Joan, I don't think that this is the best time to talk about it. I have to speak to the board of directors in 30 minutes.
But it has been going on for weeks.
Look, let's sleep on it. We'll talk again tomorrow afternoon.
All right.
I'm really busy right now. Let's discuss it tomorrow. I don't think that this is the best time to talk about it. Let's sleep on it. We'll talk again tomorrow afternoon.
Gary 提示。
Now it's time for Gary's Tips with Gary Angleton.
Hello, Elizabeth. Today I'll be talking about the language function stalling.
What do you mean by stalling?
Well, sometimes you want to delay a discussion or a decision. Maybe you want more time to think or to get more information. Or you may just be too busy to talk. Today's business dialogue introduces a number of useful expressions for stalling. In the dialogue, Joan wants to talk with Frank, but Frank is too busy.
Frank, can I talk to you?
Is it about Joe again?
Yes, it is. He's way behind on the project.
Joan, I'm really busy right now. Let's discuss it tomorrow.
Frank explains why he can't talk now, and he suggests a time when they can talk. Joan feels the discussion is too important to delay. She uses the expression, "it can't wait," to say that something must be done now.
Frank, it can't wait. He's hurting the whole team.
Joan, I don't think that this is the best time to talk about it. I have to speak to the board of directors in 30 minutes.
Again, Frank stalls, and he gives his reason for the delay. Joan tries one more time, and again, Frank puts off the discussion.
But it has been going on for weeks.
Look, let's sleep on it. We'll talk again tomorrow afternoon.
All right.
Frank makes it clear that he does not want to talk about the situation until tomorrow. In her conversation with Mr. Epstein, Ms. Graham uses a similar expression to put off discussion.
I think we really have to go ahead with this.
Yes. All right. Well, let's discuss it further tomorrow. All right?
Thanks for joining us today for Gary's Tips. We'll see you again next time.
Well, our time is up. Tune in again next time for Functioning in Business. See you then.
今天的商务通英语就复习到这里。谢谢各位收听。我们下次再见。
For further study, a Functioning in Business study kit is available from your local bookstore.
为了帮助学习，商务通英语备有课本和录音带，整套辅导学习材料，听众可以去本地的书店购买。
听众朋友，下面为您播报新闻。美国总统奥巴马星期三阐述了他为什么认为希拉里·克林顿应该在他明年一月卸任的时候接替他成为美国总统。奥巴马说，无论是男性还是女性，没有一个人比希拉里更胜任这个职务。在宾州费城举行的民主党全国代表大会上，奥巴马强调了希拉里在他政府中所取得的各项成就。他把希拉里形容为这样一位候选人，说他相信当所有背景的人都团结在一起的时候，这个国家会变得更加美好。奥巴马还谈到了希拉里的从政经验，例如在他第一届总统任期内担任过美国国务卿等，并且以此与毫无公职经验的共和党候选人川普进行对比。当奥巴马提到川普的名字时，人群中爆发出一片嘘声。奥巴马说，不要嘘，要投票。奥巴马说，上个星期的共和党全国代表大会对于存在的问题非但没有提出严肃的解决办法，反而煽动不满、指责、愤怒和仇恨。奥巴马总统批评了川普的竞选班子提出的在美墨边境建造围墙以及禁止穆斯林进入美国等建议。奥巴马还对川普向北约盟国发出强硬的信息进行了抨击。川普表示，在美国提供援助之前，他会坚持让这些国家首先履行自己的财务责任。美国共和党候选人川普星期三鼓励俄罗斯潜入他的民主党对手希拉里·克林顿的电邮服务器，寻找克林顿担任国务卿时失踪的那33000条电子邮件。川普对媒体说，要是看到那些电邮会很有意思。他说，我要告诉你，俄罗斯，如果你在听的话，我希望你们能够找到这33000条失踪的电邮，我想你们可能会从我们的媒体那里得到丰厚的回报。川普说，莫斯科可能已经掌握了这些电邮。克林顿认为这些是他的私人电邮，并从2009年到2013年他在奥巴马总统第一届任期内担任国务卿期间使用的电邮服务器上全都删除。川普说，俄罗斯或许已经拿到了这些电邮。他说，我希望这些电邮能公布于众。克林顿的竞选班子针对川普的声明指出，这是一位主要的总统候选人首次积极的怂恿外国政权对一名政治对手进行间谍活动。熟悉此事的一位美国情报官员告诉美国之音，川普的讲话对他作为共和党总统候选人即将要听取的情报汇报没有影响。维基揭秘星期三公布了据他所称从民主党全国委员会的服务器上获取的29个录音，这些语音邮件显然是从7位民主党全国委员会成员的电邮账号中拷贝下来的，其中有些同僚对桑德斯在民主党中的影响感到不满。报道称，一位留言者不希望这位来自佛蒙特州的联邦参议员在民主党全国代表大会上发言，并且反对桑德斯提出的该党2016年竞选纲领。民主党全国代表大会在6月宣布他的系统被黑客入侵。民主党官员当时说，俄罗斯的黑客对这一入侵负责。民主党全国代表大会没有就维基揭秘公布的电邮发表评论，也没有质疑它的真实性。星期三，土耳其当局宣布解除2400多名军人的职务，并且查封了数十家媒体，针对埃尔多安总统的政变失败以后的镇压行动看来正在扩大。至少有一名新闻工作者遭到拘禁，土耳其最大的报纸《时代报》编辑部原来的工作人员有近50人收到了逮捕证。美国国务院表示，对新闻媒体采取的这种行动代表着一种令人不安的势头，未遂政变之后抓捕记者是土耳其政治中出现的令人不安势头的一部分。土耳其国营私营媒体都报道说，现在已经有45家报纸被查封，还有3家通讯社和16家电视公司也遭到了同样的命运。各位听众，以上是美国之音的一组国际新闻，由陆阳在美国首都华盛顿为您播报，感谢收听。
以下为您重播美国之音 VOA 卫视时事大家谈节目。因为是节目录音，请您不要拨打电话。
著名门户网站腾讯的习近平发表重要讲话笔误事件发生几个星期以来呢，在中共高层大规模发酵，导致腾讯网总编及涉事主编被撤职，网络媒体遭到广泛的整治，新浪、搜狐、网易、凤凰等网站被迫关停和清理大批节目。有分析说，中共官方要求除体育和娱乐之外，所有新闻都应该受到监控和管制。官方整顿各家门户网站虽然有法可依，但是中宣部门和网管部门的虚弱却是一览无遗。那么当代文字狱是否捆绑住中国网络媒体的生存空间？我们今天讨论的嘉宾仍然是北京之春荣誉主编胡平先生以及时事评论员温云超先生，继续欢迎两位，也欢迎各位听众观众朋友打电话来参加讨论。我们的免费热线电话号码是400-120-0551，您还可以通过 VOA 卫视在 YouTube 的网上直播收看并加入我们的现场讨论，网址是 youtube.com/VOAChina。 首先请问胡平先生，关于这次习近平发表重要讲话的这个处理呢，现在看来已经是尘埃落定，有关的这个相关的编辑、总编等等都受到了处罚。那么联系到以前发生过的中国最后领导人等等这些事件的处理，你认为中共是不是正在形成一场新的文字狱？
当然，现在中国正在出现一场文字狱。尽管这么多年来，这个当局一直在对中国的意义进行打压，不过很显然，自习近平上台以来呢，这种打压的力度是有了大幅度的增加，中国的意义空间呢进一步的被压缩。就拿这次这个腾讯发表这个所谓发飙这个笔误来看，因为任何人都可以看得很清楚，这是一个笔误。而且有网民呢还搜罗出过去，也有些这个媒体在报道江泽民或者温家宝的时候也出现了一些笔误，而当时的江泽民和温家宝对此都没有做出像习近平今天的这样的反应。其实我想习近平自己当然也知道这是笔误，那他只不过是在借题发挥，他就是想造成一种作为他这个习近平神圣不可侵犯，谁碰着谁就会倒霉。那么这种情况我们在文革中遭遇过很多，文革中间我们经常看到一些人也仅仅是由于笔误或者喊口号喊错了但是就被打成现行犯，打成反革命，遭到惩治等等。所以这个呢，他应该说他以一个笔误为由头来大做文章，这种事情本身就已经表明了这次压制的一个非常极其恶劣的性质。另外我们还看到呢，就在这些天，那个一个安徽大学生，因为他在他的微博上发布了一个习近平的这个照片，经过 PS 的照片，那么被当局就拘留10天。这个同样看出这里头不单单是一般性的专制政权要这个加强对言论的打压，同时也表明了习近平加强个人权利的这么一个很突出的表现。
温云超先生，现在我给你读一个我们网友提出的问题。这位叫万方刘的先生或者女士，他提出，我想问嘉宾，本来高压就赶走了官媒中的有良知的记者，剩下的多是求官求财的马屁精，然而他们现在随时都可能遭到文字狱，那么又有多少人还愿意进入官媒呢？虽然中国的人口基数大，但毕竟媒体人不是可以速成的，赶走了专业人员让临时工来顶替，会不会出现更多的发飙呢？请您来解答一下。温先生，你听到了吗？
听到吗？
好，请你来对这个网友的评论发表一下你的看法。
我觉得对于中国的官媒来讲，其实他们有没有专业人员对他们并不是特别要紧的事情。也就是说，如果他们不需要再做这种深入的调查性报道的话，那他们只需要像传统的记者那样写出一些歌功颂德的文章，他们并不需要这些专业人员。所以就是说，我们 不要总是有选择性的假装自己生活在正常的国家，以为这些媒体需要有专业伦理的要求，事实上他们完全不 care， 他们完全不需要。所以刚才的这个万先生或者万小姐，我想他的担心有点多余。如果他们对这些中国传统的媒体，包括现在的一些商业门户网站还寄予理想的话，那是他对现在这个政权和现在政权的管制手段还是认识的不够到位和清楚。
那胡平先生，你刚才谈到了在过去呢也发生过类似的这样的这个笔误的事件或者是技术事故，你谈到了温家宝，当时有一篇报纸在把温家宝的名字报道的时候写成了温家氏，温家宝看到以后就说这很显然是五笔字形输入的时候出了错误，没有问题，请千万不要来处理这位编辑或者记者。那么江泽民当年呢也是因为中央电视台播放江泽民接见外宾的时候放错了录像带，后来央视的台长给江泽民打电话，江泽民说这件事儿我想在你我之间把它解决掉就可以了。所以我现在想给你念一个网友的评论，这位网友叫 Mike Zan， 他说目前中共政权一方面深陷塔西佗陷阱，政府公信力彻底丧失，另一方面对体制内的个人言论严加管束，风闻言事，这是不是权力核心高度不自信所致？中国真的逃脱不了自古以来的封建专制体制吗？您的看法？
我觉得这当然是专制政权从本质性上不自信的一种表现，但另一方面呢，他也可能是一个独裁者，他对自己权力一方面有着高度不自信，所以要加强控制，另一方面呢对自己已经得到的这种权力具有这个得到这么巨大的权力又有一种这个高度的信心，这两个是不相矛盾的。那么习近平今天之所以敢于做的比他的前任更为严厉，除了个性的上的差异之外呢，那么他我想他多半也是仗着这些年来中国的经济、中国国力有所进展，因此就所谓俗话说的所谓这个财大气粗，和这个有一个相当的关系。另外呢，习近平强化自己的个人权力，也和这他上台两年多来以反腐败为理由，那个加强这个对这个官员的这个整顿，从而使自己的个人权力呢远远超过了江湖时代，这点也有相当的关系。所以他不仅仅是这个权力虚弱的表现，同时呢，也可以是一种个人权力比以前更强的表现。
嗯，温云超先生，我看到了有一些评论说，最近中国这个网管部门呢，不断在发飙，一件一件的处理。有关的所谓的笔误事件或者星城文字狱等等，是因为和现在互联网换了这个负责人有关，你是不是同意这种说法？
当然就是说从卢伟换成徐林出任这个网信办主任，我想这个可能有直接的关系，但是这个只是一个结果而不是一个原因。原因当然应该放在最近三五年来整个中国管制方式发生的变化。我们可以现在习近平执政以来，他的思路就是说要体现出就是一个主义、一个政党、一个领袖、一个声音这么一个思路，也就是说纳粹化的这么一个方向。所以包括从不得妄议中央，还有到这次的对这个时政栏目的这种封杀，都是体现了这种管制的思维。所以就是说他有这样的宏观的背景，那然后他还有就是说要为明年召开的19大清场，这个意图也是很明显的。然后在这两个大背景下，然后才有卢伟换成了徐林这么一个安排。徐林是我想算是习近平的亲信，在卢伟的时代，他们允许一些非法我加个引号啊，这些时政栏目的存在，这是他的一个管理的一个艺术，或者叫一个方式。对于普通的叫做非党媒办的新闻网站来讲，他们容纳一定 程度的这种制裁的内容，一方面可以为它的品牌建设，另一方面他们可以建立竞争性的优势。而芦苇通过允许这些商业化网站操作这些时政栏目这种非法的方式，那也加强它和这些这些商业化网站的利益捆绑，然后形成一个双方的一种互惠的安排。那当然对于徐林来讲，他如果不需要做这种安排的话，他只需要为刚才所说的前面两个背景性的原因所服务的话，他当然要把它通通的砍掉，并且这些栏目从2005年中国颁发的互联网新闻信息发布管理规定上来讲，真它就是非法的。所以对于当局来讲，砍掉就砍掉了，也是合法的行为，也没什么大不了。
嗯，胡斌先生，刚才有一位网友呢来询问，是您解答的。他询问中国今后对互联网的管制是会延续现在的模式，还会像朝鲜那样采取物理断网的方式？您的回答是主要会是延续现在的这种管制的方式。但是我们看到中国的人大目前正在对互联网的管制法的这个修改进行讨论，其中一条就是在发生突发性的重大社会事件的时候要进行物理断网。有些网友评论，这是要给互联网加上一个开关。当然这种情况在过去新疆出现这个所谓这个骚动事件的时候就已经发生过，当局对新疆的互联网进行了维持一年超过一年的这种断网的措施，当然电话等等也受到管制。你认为今后这种情况会频繁发生吗？如果会人大通过立法而且经常发生的话，会给中国的社会和舆情带来什么样的影响？
我想它会在一些特殊的时刻来发生，但是大体上平常呢不会采取这么极端的手段，因为中国当今中国它有各种各样的问题，它也需要它的这个在经济方面在科学方面有所发展，因此它不可能对这个互联网采取是这么这个坚决彻底的态度。这点上来说呢，它和北朝鲜还是有着很重要的区别。那么刚才提到呢，只是说目前的这种管制方式会延续下去。另外呢，当然不排除在某些特殊的情况下会采取一些就是更彻底的方式，仅此而已。
嗯，温超先生，我这里又收到一位网友李涛提出的问题，他说习近平发飙事件是不是显示大陆局势已经到了无法容忍任何对统治集团的诋毁和嘲笑？您的看法？
我想这个毫无疑问，我很同意刚才，也就是说，当局对自己的统治高度的不自信，第二，他们对自己的统治呢权力又是高度的自信，所以他们就是说，基于这两者之下，他们就是说可以完全不顾外界的反应，做出他们自己的这种安排。其实我们在类似的包括像南海。包括南韩部署萨德系统诸如此类的事情当中，我们都可以看到官方这个逻辑体系，也就是说他们在对权力在整个统治的不自信下，又对权力的高度自信的情况下，他们就会表现出这种荒唐保守僵化退化蛮憨的这种作为。这个其实我们外界把它单独解读成这个不自信，我想这个也是有问题，他们这是很自信的表现。
胡斌先生，请你接着谈一谈刚才温超先生就是他说的，我想是很有嘲讽的意味，他说是也是当局自信的一种反应。那你认为导致中共当局目前对自己的，他们一直要讲要三个自信，现在又加上一个文化自信等等，不管三个还是四个，导致中共当局对自己越来越不自信的原因是什么呢？
这个就使我想起2010年的时候，不是那个刘晓波获得诺贝尔奖，当时呢挪威的诺贝尔奖这个评选委员会在发布的公告中一方面写了为什么要把奖颁给刘晓波的原因，另一方面呢用了很大的篇幅去表彰中共当局取得这样那样的成就。 我想他这个逻辑无非是这个逻辑，说你既然共产党在中国各方面都做得这么不错，那么你们大可以在人权方面也有所改进嘛。那么这里就表明他根本不懂得中国共产党的逻辑。而中国共产党他是这么想的，他说我们之所以能够在很多方面搞得好，就是因为我们在人权问题上表现得特别坏，如果我们在人权问题上表现好了，我们别的好就没有了。那所以这个自信不自信，我觉得这个其实就体现在这个问题上。一方面他们非常的清楚啊，他们整个这套制度是建立在对人们这个自由意志的否定之上，因此一旦允许人们能够自由表达他们的意志，一旦人们手里有了选票，那么呢他们统治顷刻之间就可以垮台。但另一方面呢，他们又发现他们凭借手中的暴力工具能够有效的压制人们的不满，那么因此呢就造成了这么他一种对权的过去。你像六四，这是个突出的事件我想在六四刚刚发生之初，当局恐怕很多人还是相当的惊恐，他们以为这种情况是一定是很难维持下去，可是后来发现他们居然也就维持下去了，居然也就坚持下来了，到后来也就好像没事了，而且在其他方面还取得了某些进展，这样子就使得他们造成了对暴力的一种依赖。而暴力本身呢，又是建立在对人民意志的否定的基础之上，这就形成我们刚才所说到的，就是他的一种自信和不自信的这种矛盾状态之所以能够发生的一个原因。
我也想补充一句，
嗯，
其实前几天那个外交政策杂志发表了一篇文章，分析为什么习近平的外交政策全面失败的文章，他里头就提到一点，很有可能是高层对整个大形势发生了误判，例如他们认为美国在次贷危机之后已经走下坡路，马上要不行了，那中国正在飞黄时期，所以要改变外交这种政策的时候，那个包括像五月份那个权威人士在人民日报发表的文章，他们认为中国的经济承受能力可以承受这种 L 型的转型，所以需要赶快进行结构转型，而不需要去刺激经济和服务业这些东西。我想就是说，会不会有一个问题，就是说中国高层对整个宏观形势的判断跟事实确实是有出入，或者说他们得到的信息是跟外界得到的是完全不一样的呢？我觉得这也是他们建立了自己的自信的一个很有可能的原因之一。
嗯，胡斌先生，
我再补充一句，
是
我想这个情况目前出现这个情况，可能也和习近平个人的执政色彩有相当的关系。
嗯，
因为我们看到，过去江湖时代，同样的情况就已经在发生。但是出乎一般人意料的是，到了习近平时代，所有的这些恶劣现象不但没有改善，反而变本加厉，这一点是超出很多人的想象。我想这个和习近平本人的这个执政风格应该说有相当大的关系。那么其实这个习近平的所作所为，应该说在很多方面就是已经背离了邓小平当年的这个路线，尽管我们对邓小平路线本身持一种强烈的批评态度。那就像我看不久前就在大概7月22号吧，在中央的一次会议上，那习近平也强调改革是一场革命谈到这个不改革就是死路一条，但是他同时还强调呢，改革一定要坚持社会主义方向。那我们知道，关于对改革就是革命这种强调，当年邓小平在邓小平早就讲过。另外，不改革就是死路一条，这个邓小平92年南巡也已经提到过。但是在邓小平那里，不改革就是死路一条这一句话是紧紧联系着不问姓氏姓资的。而在习近平这里呢，不改革就是死路一条紧紧联系的一句话呢，是必须坚持社会主义方向，不能这个走向资本主义的邪路。而这后面这种说法恰恰是在邓小平92年南巡之前一些保守派的人员他们的论调。所以在这些方面来看呢，就再加上我们看到其他的一些信息，包括对国有企业的改革的态度啊，包括政治上的全面控制啊，意识形态的进一步收紧呢，这都可以看出，那么今天的习近平他的执政当局，他的执政路线就是显然在相当程度上是不符合，是违背了邓小平的路线，而在很多方面呢是在向毛泽东的路线回归。这一点我觉得也是一个值得大家注意的。
啊，温云超先生，
如果把习近平先生改革就是一场革命的革命理解成是对邓小平的改革的革命，一切就顺理成章了。
嗯，温云超先生，现在 刚才你谈到了美国的外交杂志上确实他有这么一个判断，就是中国最高当局实际上对总体形势对宏观的误判都是错误的。那么我的问题是，在你看来，中共最高领导层他们在掌握国情、舆情、党情、民情，在这方面是不是有很大的偏差，从而让人们来怀疑他们自己的资讯的来源是不是个丰富，是不是全面，或者说他们能不能得到真正的资讯，你的看法？
我想这个对于中国传统的官方的这套行为习惯来讲，他们是越左越安全，越保守的话越安全，所以下面往一层层往上送材料的时候，当然是报喜不报忧。那送到知道习近平这种性格的人，动不动拍桌子，动不动让下属提头来见的人，他们当然是不希望把坏消息放在习近平的案头，所以只靠下面送过来这些内部材料信息，做出掌握这些信息然后做出批示的中国最高执政层来讲，毫无疑问他们很难的全面的掌握外界的环境和反应。包括就是这最明显最显著的例子，就是南海仲裁，这显然是不了解情况，也不知道国际法，也不知道中堂和糟糕的结果。我想这个是，我想外我们很难知道，就是说当局他自己，就是说最高执政领导他自己的信息渠道如何，据说他也会上网，但是我怀疑他只会上新华社之类的网站，人民，那他跟他自己看到的这种报道他案头的倾向又有什么样的区别呢？所以就是说毫无疑问，这种不对称的信息提供，一方面是用中国当局用来统治民众，另一方面也是对于高层身边的人提供给高层决策的时候，我想也是处于这种不对称的信息环境当中。我想这个才能够相对的去合理解释为什么中国在最近几年内政外交上出现那么糟糕的状况。
嗯，胡平先生，你认为是不是有人在中国的最高领导人他们的周围建了了一堵非常严实的防火墙，还是他们本身就愿意生活在或者工作在这个密不透风的防火墙里面，你的看法？
目前出现的情况就像我刚才讲到的，和习近平个人的执政风格有很大的关系。因为事实上过去中共领导人包括江泽湖，他们也是处在相同的这种公平的这种舆论的氛围之下，他们看到的也是下面的人希望他们看到的那些信息，换言之也是经过选择的。但是呢，你可以看出习近平上台以来呢，包括内政外交都和他的前任有所不同。那么这里表现出的，与其说是他们所得到作为最高领导人他们所得到的这种信息的偏差，信息的那个不全面之外，更重要的是说明执政者本人的他的价值取向。换言之，就是我们大可以相信今天的习近平对于过去的那种官僚系统他是相当的不满意的。我们可以看到呢，现在的习近平当局和目前的中共的整个的官僚系统是存在着很大的分歧和矛盾的。所以从这点来看呢，就是说固然那么他整个向高层这个传递信息的这个系统本身有很大的问题，但是呢，之所以这个事情在今天表现得这么严重，那是和习近平个人他的价值取向有着更为直接的联系。
非常同意。
嗯，好的，非常精彩的讨论，但是时间到了，今天是大家谈的讨论就进行到这里了。非常感谢胡平先生和温运超先生参加节目的讨论。时事大家谈是一个自由的论坛，嘉宾和听众观众发表的都是个人观点，不代表美国之音。以上就是今天 VOA 卫视时事大家谈的全部内容，感谢您的收听收看。美国民主党代表大会这个星期在费城举行，这个星期一到星期四北京时间上午9点到10点，我们连续4天从费城大会现场进行脸书直播，全方位多角度为您解读这次重要的会议，欢迎参与讨论。明天的时大家谈讨论的话题之一就是正在进行的这次美国民主党代表大会，另外一个话题是台湾如何处理国民党的党产。
这是美国之音的中文广播。